All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode here on the Lure Lab, which is a part of the Sirius Angler Network, and I am your host, Andrew Fall. Today, we hope you enjoyed the latest episode where we had Caleb Bell on talking about the float and fly and how it originated at Dale Hollow Lake over here, like the Middle Tennessee area, Kentucky border, East Coast, real finessey stuff, and how it, you can catch basically every species of bass on it. It was really cool. He broke down a lot of the jigs, what floats to use, how to modify floats. So I hope everyone goes back and checks that out. But today we have an awesome episode. We have Jake Boomer coming on out there in the Pacific Northwest, and we're going to be talking wintertime jig fishing. And as everyone knows, wintertime jig fishing can get you really big bites, but can also help salvage your day and get that last fish in the boat. So, and we're going to dive into the proper presentation on how to fish it and basically where you're going to throw it. So without further ado, let's get Jake on here. Stumbling over my words today. This is a pretty rough.
It's one of those days.
Yeah, it's one of those days. So how are you, man?
I'm doing good. I've got kind of similar weather to you. It's cold. I'm ready to go fishing.
Yeah. Do you have any events coming up?
I actually do. We have Lake Shasta in 3 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, which it's kind of crazy because it's wintertime for Shasta. Up here, most of our water is pretty solid. It's some of it's melting off, though. There was talks yesterday that some guys might be able to get on Ponderay, which would be pretty awesome.
Hmm. That is very interesting. They've been getting a lot of rain down there from what I'm seeing.
Yeah, and they stink and need it. Like, they were canceling tournaments on Clear Lake at the end of the year last year. Their city council shut them down, shut all the ramps down because the water was so low, which if you've never been there, that's like the coolest place on the planet. To see it not allowing fishing is sad. So
it gives the fish a reprieve, though, because that lake is heavily pressured. So
it is. It is.
So that's
there's good. 1 billion largemouth in that thing, though. That's for sure.
Is there any spots or anything in Clear, or is it just largemouth?
I've only ever caught largemouth. There might be something else in there, but I've never caught them.
Well, it doesn't matter. There's giant largemouth, and that's what people go there for. So, but we're going to dive right into it, right? We're talking wintertime jig fishing. So we'll get right into the juice of things. What are the primary jigs you are going to use during the wintertime? And also, do you make any of your own jigs?
Okay, so when you said, hey, Jake, let's do a wintertime thing, I was talking to my friend Polinick, a name dropping there, and I'm like, I don't know if I wintertime fish. And he goes, don't you go to Shasta? What do you throw for the spots? So I actually tied this up. This is the jig that I will take to Shasta this next week. And this is just a rubber jig. I think the number one thing about jig fishing in the winter, one of my number one things is having rubber. I don't know if you can see that very well.
Ooh. Is that like a living rubber?
All living rubber. And you can buy it. But a lot of companies, like this jig, I believe is a Bass Patrol. They're super cheap. They've got a good hook in them. I think they're like $1.99. I'll have to check that again. But it's Bass Patrol. And when I fish Shasta for spots, I rip out the you can see it. Cut out the – there's no
– the weed guard.
Weed guard. Yeah. And there's just not a lot to get hung up on. And I just don't want anything in the way. The spots get kind of finicky in the cold water. So I pull that out. But I think the number one key for me is the living rubber. And I've got a bunch of jigs in here. Here's a big one I'll talk about later, but it's all living rubber. And what it does is it floats up in the water and it really slows that rate of fall, which I think is really important. It seems like anything moving fast in the water, in really cold water, there's the rule that I've learned is anything moving in the middle range, like, you know, kind of fast doesn't work. Really, really fast or really slow works, but that middle range seems to not catch bass. I don't know what it is. I could be wrong, but we did a tournament in Cumberland last year and the guys that cashed checks, some of them were speed reeling a crankbait in 43 degree water. And some guys were just dragging super slow, but the knuckleheads like me that were dragging normal didn't get any bites. So
it's funny. Fishing is funny in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think in a lot of opinions, but like that resonates, like that whole fact hits home. Like here in the Northeast, our lakes will go from like ice cold because the ice will come off and then it'll go right to 50 degrees in like 2 weeks. So we get the significant water jump in temperature, and the fish will not bite during that phase unless you're either burning it or fishing it so incredibly slow that you could fall asleep on a cast.
Yeah. So, which is the hard part, right? Because
yeah,
that makes no sense to burn something like that. But I always like the burning forces them to do something they really don't want to do, but it's inherent in their, it's reactionary. They have to. They're like, oh my God, they have to. But if it's slow enough that they can think about it, they're like, nah, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
But like on the opposite spectrum, if you just leave it there long enough and they can kind of not burn a lot of energy and come get it like a jig. So in that cold water, the reason I like the rubber is because you're not moving it a lot, but that rubber makes a big puff ball. And I wish I could show like what that looks like with some of these big rubber jigs. This is the best one. It makes a big old puff ball.
Well, what I would say with that living rubber too is as it's sitting there, you're just basically holding your jig still. It's moving with the natural current of the water, and that entices the bass to come and eat it, I would assume.
Yeah, it undulates. And I really I really want the hook to stand up, and I wanted to show like here, this is a jig I have made for me for kind of winter cold weather fishing. See if you can see that really good. Mm-hmm. Do you notice, like, see in the background, see how there's not a lot of lead collar up the hook?
Mm-hmm.
So the point of a football head in cold water is that you've got a lot of weight and you have it centralized. And so when you're pulling that thing down the water, you really want it to do this, right? You really want it to stand up. When you get those big football head jigs that have that weight that goes down the collar, or they got that big meat hook on them, they tend to lay flat. That's one of the things that bothers me about, like, I really want it to stand up and to float up. And so the rubber helps with that, but also not having those big metal shank hooks. I especially in cold water, I don't think it's necessary. And only one situation I could say a really heavy hook is good for wintertime football head fishing, and that's when they're in the brush, which they are. Like Lake of the Ozarks, I talked to an alpha angler yesterday. They're catching them out of the brush in cold water. Yeah, I'd want a bigger hook, but for what? Like for Northwest, West Coast, spots and smallmouth, I don't want that big meat hook, you know? I don't want it to pull that bait back down to the bottom, be flat on the bottom.
Now, on these jigs, right, we're talking specific wintertime, what kind of trailers would you put on them? Because we're talking that middle ground, like super slow or super fast. So you want it to slow, you want that jig to fall at like a perfect rhythm. So what is your trailer of choice?
Yeah, this one right here, I really like this particular trailer. A trailer is kind of, in my opinion, in cold water, is kind of just a keeper. Mm-hmm. Like you got to have something back there. But this is just a Jaboom Baits. This is their flipping trailer. But what I like about it is it's little or no movement. But the thing I like best about it is this material floats a little bit. So I don't want to butt
rock forward more.
Yeah. It just kind of helps it stay up. And I don't like I want it to float. I don't like a lot of kicking action in super cold water for smallmouth, but for spots, I think this is the best trailer, which is it kicks just a little tiny bit. It's just a speed craw, your standard speed craw.
Yeah. One of the extremely versatile bait there. Great jig trailer.
The funny thing about the speed craw, though, like this has turned me off for years until I had a couple good days fishing with it. And I had a really good angler from Northern California show this to me. I would throw this in the water, this jig in the water, and as it fell, these legs wouldn't kick. Mm-hmm. And that bothered me. It's not kicking, you know what I mean? But that wasn't the point. We weren't trying to get a bite on the fall as much as when it got to the bottom, you pulled it a little bit, these legs seemed to just undulate like the rubber does. And so it actually turned out to be I actually think its non-movement version is just as good as if it was kicking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because when you get one of these big rubber jigs and stick like this thing, this is what they call fine rubber. So there's a lot of fine rubber in it, but it's living rubber. There's not a lot of water movement through the rubber. That's why it falls so slow, right? You're not getting a lot of water to come through the rubber and make the legs kick like it would on this. And that used to really bother me. I'm like, well, if it's got kicking legs, it should kick. But then when I was getting my butt kicked by a guy that had this big mop ball with this on it, I'm like, they don't really care. And if you ever go to like what I like to do when we get into a really cold water tournament, especially if it's clear, is that first or second day of practice to throw your jig on the boat ramp in the morning or on your way back in when you got some light and just see what it looks like. it's better to do at the end of the day when you got a few bites to be like, all right, they ate it for this reason. And then maybe you get a little more confidence that it wasn't the way the legs kicked or whatever. But if you bump a jig, you're slow moving a football head in cold water and you bump it against a rock and it kind of hangs up and and it pops a little bit free. I feel like the speed craw will just kick a little bit, two or three kicks and then back to the bottom, whatever you bumped it over. And that's generally, I think they'll eat it.
And I think that's a great point there too. Like, I bet you 95% of the time, that's when you're getting bit is when it gets hung up a little bit and you pop it off.
Yep. It's like I said, right? It's that really short burst of fast, or they ate it when it was sitting on the bottom, right? But just hanging it up on that rock and just popping it free is a very short distance, but done very quickly, right? Counting rocks. They call it counting rocks, where you hit a rock, you pop it over the rock. If you go 2 feet, they don't bite it. But if you go one, you know what I mean? Have you ever thought about that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We actually do that a lot with just like little swim baits. That's how we fish them around here in the spring, is we count rocks.
Yeah. And if you count five rocks in a pole, it's too much, right?
Yep. 100%. So, yeah. But all right. So like, we got the football jigs, we got trailers. Next is the rod, reel, and line setup.
Reel and line. That's pretty easy unless your customers or the lure labists don't know, but we use the Zilla. That's upside down, but I can't turn it around or I'll have to bust it in half. I'll break it and send it to Brandon. 7'3" medium heavy. This is kind of our dual rod. What's really important, I don't care what brand it is, I really feel like you have to have a really good parabolic bend in your football heads in the winter. A couple things about football heads in the winter that I think that I've learned over time. Smallmouth are really good at, I learned this lesson with smallmouth, but a lot of guys want to downsize to a really thin line to get that real slow falling jig down there. And in really cold water, if you have a fluorocarbon that's really doesn't have a lot of stretch, and an example would be like, I don't think there's a lot of stretch in like Invisex or what's the really good stuff?
From the Seaguar line, is it Brazex?
The step red above that.
Yeah. Tatsu
does not have a lot of stretch. And in really cold water, I feel like you need a little stretch in your fluorocarbon, because when you swing really hard, I feel like there's a little brittleness that comes from that cold weather. And maybe it's not the water that does it. Maybe it's the 33 degree run down the lake that really makes that line a little more brittle, but we're starting to break off a lot. So I look for a fluorocarbon that has a little bit more stretch, and I go up at a couple, like for instance, this Shasta bait that I'm going to take, football head, will probably be fished fairly deep. It's going to have 15-pound test, even though it's deep. I know it's going to fall slow. I need the patience to fish it deep like that. I'm going to want that a little bit stretch in the line. Mm-hmm. But then we'll use like a 7-foot medium heavy to kind of really – I really want the one thing I've learned about jig fishing, and most of it I learned from talking to other pro anglers and my buddies, is you really want a pressure overtime with a jig set hook in cold water, especially in cold water. You don't want that – smack pop, right? So a lot of people feel like
sweep, like a big sweep hook set.
Well, in really deep water, just hit them as hard as you can, because the stretch and the bow and the rod will make up all of that, right? But it seems like they hold onto those jigs so hard that if you do that sweep pop, you don't drive the hook, right? It just seems like we land a lot more fish when we go to a little bit smaller hook, like I showed you with this. I'll tell you what this hook is too. This is a 111, a 3-aught 111. And, a really hard pressure, but over a longer period of time to get that, you have stretch, you have a rod that loads a little bit more, you know what I mean? That up close and smashing them like everybody thinks should happen to drive a hook, I don't think drives those jig hooks as well. And not, I think with it tends to drag the hook down their mouth, and kind of, that's when you skin hook them and you're like, man, you get one in a skin hook, you're like, that hook should have not gone in like that. So I like a little bit more stretch and, maybe not such a meat stick rod. Is that like kind of my take on rods? But I do like a really fast reel.
So for a bigger football jig, you're going to use a Zilla. Now, if you went down to like a small finesse one, like the open water football jig by Beast Coast or a Kitech, would you use a clutch?
So my experience with the clutch is, if you have a weed guard, the answer for me is no.
Okay.
I still feel like you need an even power, just over a longer period of time, to really set that hook. And the only reason I know this is for years I would throw those little finesse jigs. We'd go like to Cumberland for the Costa Championship or whatever. And I found that, I lost two or three fish that tournament that probably cost me a check. Two of them were on a finesse jig with the clutch. I feel like the clutch doesn't have enough heavy. The pressure isn't hard enough over time. Does that make sense?
Yep.
But I think you could overdo it too. You'll see these guys in the winter that will go braid mainline. And, even like if you do a braid mainline on our Zilla 7.3 medium heavy, you've technically made it a flippant stick, a little bit heavier. You've made it a 7.6 heavy because that stretch is gone and you get that popping action where it kind of pops. The jig just kind of moves that short distance in their mouth. I don't feel like I get as good a hook set with that. Yeah. So I've gone to fluorocarbon, avoided the braid, but I wanted that nice, even pressure across the hook set. And a lot of times when you bomb a football head out there and you're fishing like a rock pile, there's a pretty good sized bow in your line, even if it's 10 feet of water. You're trying to stay away from the rock pile. This is somewhat of a finesse type presentation in the winter. You're not pulling it very fast. There'll be a bow in your line either on its fall or that'll be up like that as you let it sit, right? It'll kind of pendulum. Yep. You're going to have to get rid of that. So I like a little bit longer rod.
Fair. So you're getting to the reel. So what reel do you use? Is that gear ratio is faster, better, or do you want something slower so you can just kind of winch them?
No, I want it fast. I want to pick up as much line as possible. And for all those guys that want to buy like $500 reels, I got to show you guys this reel. I think this is a Tatula. It's like the original one, right?
Yeah. Just a 100 size?
Yeah. The nice thing about jig fishing is I really don't feel like you need to blow $500 on a reel. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like just winch it down and reel.
Yes, absolutely. I might leave a little less drag, give it just a little touch of it. But this, I think, is an 8-to-1 with 15-pound test on it. And, I mean, there's so much meat to a jig anyway, right, that it's you don't have to go buy your stees to throw your football heads.
If you want 20 feet extra casting distance, maybe you buy a stees, but you know how to dial it in, you might be able to get it close. So, right.
And that's probably a good thought to that. There is the school of thought though, that these guys that launch these jigs so far out, right? Just, I learned this online when we fished Kentucky TVA chain, right? It's so far out that you can't get a hook in them at the end of the cast anyway. You know what I mean? You kind of hope you work it back a little bit before they eat. Because you're really getting some massive stretch.
Now, I do have a question when it comes to like the hook set and the gear ratio. When, like, let's say that jig falls on the initial fall, right, and one eats it right away, are you reeling down and leaning into them, or are you just leaning and then reeling as you're like almost through the lean? You know, like that big reel sweep.
Well, so what you should do is reel all the slack out in a nice, even, hard hook set. What I do and what I've been working on my whole career is not to be like, oh, my God, I got a bite, and pop them without getting that tension in it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
I think we can all say we've been there and we do that. So,
yeah. Hopefully you get a couple of good bites in practice and you could screw it up before practice and be like, tell people I shook that one off. Yeah, I shook that off.
You big dummy. I'm going to tell them I shook it off and I just flubbed it all up.
That's right.
So
I'm a huge proponent of that solid pressure, but over time that impact that we all think we want to create, I don't think drives jig. That's those fish that are hooked on the outside of the mouth and goofy. You know what I mean? I don't like that.
Yeah. So almost like what would be best probably is as you're reeling in like that applied pressure over time, even taking like a few steps back if you're on a boat as you're reeling and driving that hook home, as opposed to just reeling down, is probably best. Like the old Iaconelli hook them and run to the back of the boat type hook set.
Yeah. When he goes crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. And I'm not trying to say you don't set the hook hard. But I think your rod, your reel, and your hooks and all that stuff is a system. And the point is, however you do it, that you want a heavy pressure, but over a little bit of time, not that pop, that quick click. You know what I mean? You really want to, and I'm not saying, you sweep set them like a drop shot. I mean, you still got to put your back into it. Like for instance, yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, that's the best part of fishing, right? This right here is, we can get into some lure making, but I'll show you guys. this is a football head. This is actually one that I fished Rayburn with an open on Rayburn, and Paulnick actually made this one for me. He actually had this made for him. But this, it's hard to see. I'll see if I can get this hook. That's a pretty good size hook, right? Oh. It's actually a 4-aught, pretty heavy hook. And in the winter, and this is still rubber, this is still living rubber, and it's an X zone trailer, kicker trailer on there. But the largemouth in the winter, in the colder weather, tend to get to wood, and they're not as deep. So this is pretty heavy for what, you know, you might go down to a half. This is a 3/4. But you're throwing this into a brush pile. And with forward facing technology, everybody's looking for brush piles. That's what the conversation I had yesterday with one of our MPFL alphas was. They're just fishing brush piles, 43 degree water. They're throwing football heads because one of the main reasons I think they like to throw football heads into brush piles is you get that straight up and down fall because all of the weight of the football heads at the bottom, and it kind of just, it's a slow fall. It goes in there. They kind of meander out of the pile and they eat it, but you still have to deal with wood, and generally the largemouth are bigger. So with this setup and this rubber one, I'll crack them. I'll use a 7.6 heavy, right? A big hard, and I'll go to 20 pound test.
Yeah.
One, because I want it to fall slow anyway. And it's going into brush, and I want to clear the brush when I set the hook. So that's a different than like dragging them over a rock pile and you have the littler hook. The thing I don't like, when I look at that, if you can see the difference between this big hook, see how big that hook is?
It's like long. That? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a 5-aught big old meat hook on a football head. So it's got a lot of the weight the way I like it at the bottom with that weight. So it falls straight down and it kind of sits up. This hook actually creates so much weight that it falls down in the water. It doesn't want to, even when I've built off of this jig head rubber, it still sits flat because this is such a meathead hook, right? It's so big. So I'm not a really big fan, and I never have been. I know somebody would argue with me. I'm not a really big fan in any jig with these really big hooks. I feel like they're really hard to drive. I feel like they get in there and they're so big and they close their mouth and the hook rolls over on its side. It's not in there even clean where it can come out and go into the top of their mouth when you pull up. They get kind of cattywampus in there because they're so stinking big. This is the same model, but with a little bit smaller. You can see that it's a 4-aught. It's not as long. This, yep, this football head doesn't fall down. So a little different. But.
So moving forward here, we covered one spot that you'd fish the jig in the winter. Where else would you target bass during the winter time and cold water
months? So number one, it took me a long time to figure this out. Up here in the Northwest, it's huge. You want slow moving current. So let's imagine. So if you don't have any current, we'll talk about, you know, this main lake points and stuff like that. But almost every place that we have is a reservoir, has a little bit of moving water, not enough that you'll ever notice. But like if you have a big bend in the lake and there's maybe some flats that are, you know, off the end of the bend, but mm-hmm. they're going to be where that slow moving current just slowly goes by it. And almost everywhere we talk about, it's Lake Shasta, it's way up the river or it's down by the dam. It's always where that current is somewhat concentrated. And you're obviously going to fish your deep stuff, right? Deep rock piles, points. With forward facing imaging, I think that we could all write a magazine article about what we thought it should have been. But now we're fighting them in different places. You know what I mean? There was an article out where Wheeler said everything we know about bass fishing has been debunked because of forward facing sonar. I agree with that too, except for the one thing. If there's current, slow moving current, I'm going to find the deepest stuff and find where it's going to move around it.
Yeah. Fish always relate to current, no matter how warm or cold the water is, because that's where the best oxygen is in the entire lake. So
yeah.
And it
constantly. I agree. I think it's like slow moving current. They're lazy and they're tired. They're laying on the bottom. The water's cold. Something comes to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like, oh, there's,
it's like they're just so fish. Lazy. Oh, that little guy doesn't know what's coming. You know, he just kind of bounces by. Yeah. It just, I go back and look at all of the success in tournaments that I had success in the winter. I seem to be around some type of slow moving current, deeper current. So. You can go way up a river, but I've even seen it where most of those fish are close to the deepest edge, channel swings, things like that.
So current bass. So we're going to dive into the last question here, Jake, and I'm going to let you go. I want to say thank you for coming on and taking time out of this busy winter day that you have in the office. I know you've been having some fun with some technology things. So, but this is the final question, right? This is the Do It Molds juice of the show. What is one detail or specific thing you would tell anglers to look for or do when wanting to fish a jig during the winter time?
You have to stop and slow down. And if you don't have that personality like me, you need to have somebody in the boat telling you, homie, you're fishing way too fast. Like, if they don't eat it on the fall, I mean, I just think that the Jay Kumar with the Bass Blaster just had an article about the best jig fishermen are the ones that are just, you know, they're the ones that are like, did you see that bald eagle over there? That's beautiful, as they slowly move that jig.
Yeah.
I fished a tournament in the winter one time, and my buddy looked at me and he goes, you're getting your jig back to the boat faster than I'm getting this spinner bait. You're fishing it too fast. You know what I mean? I almost need that. Like, hey, count to 20. Slow down.
It seems like there's a common denominator between jig fishing and jerkbait fishing. Whoever is the best sightseer on the water and can count to like 60, the slowest, is probably going to catch more fish during wintertime.
So, well, and like with those guys that are actually slowing down and they like count rocks. Well, I did count rock. I counted like 32 of them. But like what count rocks really means is like if their jig pulls into a rock and you get a little bit of pressure on it, you can see that.
Yeah.
And then it clears and it goes like that. They're going to bite it here. If you were just boom, 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 they're not going to eat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you count rocks. It's like as slow as you can, it pull it and you pop it. And you really, if you pop it 2 feet, they won't eat it. If you pop it 6, they will. That's a really slow cadence, really slow approach. That's the number one thing. Slow way down and be patient with it. The thing that stinks with that type of fishing is it's hard to practice and cover water when you got to fish so slow. So sometimes you have to practice a few extra days for a derby, or you have to, you know, find something else that'll help you target them. We now have forward facing sonar. So
I'd say it's a great point. That's a great point, because in the winter time when we're doing this technique, right, like days are shorter. So you don't have all the time in the world to really break it down. So you better find like high percentage areas and hope you get bit in a couple casts and move on. Because if you 100%. Get bit in the wintertime, a lot of times there's more fish with it, in my opinion.
Right. And if you get bit on a football jig in the wintertime, it'll be the biggest fish that you know what I mean? It's very rare that those aren't the quality you need.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. So, well, Jake, thanks for coming on today. I look forward to getting you on here more in the future and talking maybe more fun techniques than winter jig fishing. But it's a staple in the wintertime, especially where you are. Up there in the Pacific Northwest, I know catch giant bass out there on it in the wintertime. So I want to wish you luck at Shasta, and I'm sure we'll be talking here shortly. So
cool. Thanks for having me on. I love this stuff in the winter, you know, and talking fishing is better than shoveling snow, right?
Yeah. And you guys sure probably get enough snow out there to shovel a lot of it like we do here. So
we're not getting anything you guys are getting. I'd move out of there.
Fair enough. Well, I will let you go for now, and we'll chat soon. All right, buddy?
Yeah, thank you.
Yep, we'll see you soon. Buddy. Bye. All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Lure Lab, where we talked about winter jig fishing with Jake Boomer. That was a lot of fun. It's a great way to catch really big bass in the wintertime, but not just winter. All seasons of the year, you just have to change your presentation up a little bit. But as always, if you're tuned in on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button. Leave a comment down below what your rod reel line setup is, your favorite football jig, or just jig in general during the wintertime. If you're listening to Spotify or Apple Podcasts or any of the big MP3 streaming services, please leave a review if it allows you to. It allows us to be seen to other fishermen and bass heads and reach an audience that we haven't been able to reach yet. And until next Saturday, we will see you then.